right, I think we can get started in just a minute or now. All right, so welcome to Making the Most of Office Across Devices. Welcome to the last day of Tech Ed. Thanks for joining us this morning. I hope everyone had a really fun night last night and sitting there drinking their coffee, feeling better, and remembering that this morning. My name is Marissa, and I have with me here Kabiri. We're both technical product marketing managers in the technical product marketing org. Kabiri works really closely with engineering to actually develop features across Office, across all platforms, all devices. So she works very closely with engineering on that feature creation and then the marketing of that. I work on the Office 365 deployment, adoption, and readiness team. So I spend a lot of my time thinking about end users and how to enable you as IT to turn your users into power users so that you're actually getting the full-fledged business value out of Office, out of Office 365. And that's a lot about what we're going to be talking about today, doing that across devices, across platforms, across customer scenarios. We all have a lot in common. I think we own close to 20, 25 devices, probably, between the two of us. We both like drinking wine. We both like taking pictures with cute animals. We're both technical product marketing managers, so it really made sense for us to do this demo together. This session is called Making the Most of Office Across Devices. So I want to start out by discussing some of the important market trends and reasons that make this story that we're going to be telling you today, you know, right now and then during our demo in a few minutes, so compelling and so important now, as well as for future planning. It's only going to become a more compelling story as we move forward. If you talked to me at last Tech Ed North America, or you know, even 8 months ago, last summer, we wouldn't be telling the same story. We wouldn't be telling this platform story across devices. We wouldn't be saying a lot of the things that we are today. And you know, I have some points up here just to remind us of why this session and why this idea is so important, why we need to keep it in the forefront of our minds. You know, we all know about the rise of mobile devices, the ability to work from any time, anywhere. I hope everybody here is familiar with our Office 365 story. Who here is already an Office 365 customer or is, you know, evaluating it in some certain way? Good, that's almost everybody. I would say 80, 85%. It's really the norm today to own at least three devices. Who here owns more than three devices? Who here uses those three or more devices for work? Who uses them for personal? You use the same devices for work. You use the same devices when you're at home. Who here syncs their email to their personal phone? We couldn't get work done today if we didn't use our personal devices for the work that we're doing for our employer or, you know, to get things done. We all check email at home. We all wake up in the morning and check our email before we get out of bed. We all use our phones as our alarm clocks. I talk to people in certain industries, often government and financial organizations, who are so afraid of their data integrity that their corporate policies actually restrict their employees from doing any work if they're not sitting at their desk. They're carrying around two phones, or maybe they're not even allowed to see any work data or information on their personal phone. This is becoming a less and less feasible way to run a business. And regardless of corporate policies, people are going to be using their personal devices anyways. I think the slide is already up. 61% of information workers blend work and personal usage across the set of devices that they use for work. And this is not just true when it comes to devices. 66% of information workers do the same thing in the software that they use as well. Bringing your own technology to work, we're all very familiar with the BYOD scenario and the BYOD trend that has dominated IT over the last couple of years. This is now becoming more and more relevant when we talk about services, not just devices. 53% of global workers report using their PC or smartphone on an unsupported website, unsupported software programs to help them do their jobs better. They're going to do what they need to do to get things done. It's a rat race out there. Mobile devices account for 13% of worldwide internet traffic. And when you think about the structure and the mobile story that's being told around the world today, that's a very significant number. This is up from only 4% in 2010. So over the last 4 years, this metric really speaks to the need for our ability to access resources and be productive from anywhere, and also to implement those policies, not just implement them, but actually to enforce them as IT at our enterprises. So these should not be shocking statistics to any of you, especially if you've been here all week. What's lacking, though, in many of these solutions that are already available and in place today fall into the areas of organizational control. Corporate data is housed in an external system. What if an employee leaves the organization? Corporate data still lives externally. How are content policies applied to this external data? I was having a conversation with a customer earlier this week who has employees off on an oil rig. And, you know, what happens when one employee leaves the company? They actually, as oil rig managers, share inboxes. They share one account, they share one password with the other oil rig manager. They take 1 week shifts, another week shifts. One manager needs to know everything that's going on with the other manager. But let's say employee B leaves the company for whatever reason, on his own or is let go. How does that company organize all of the data that they have used in their inbox? How do they archive all of that information without compromising the work cycle of the other oil rig manager who is sharing all of that data, who is sharing his inbox? It becomes a really complicated story. Data loss, both inadvertent and intentional, is a huge problem for all of us here. Especially in financial government organizations, I could go on. Policies are being created every day, and we just don't have the ability to keep up with that as far as actually enforcing that on the IT side. We want to be able to look at these policies and actually enforce them and actually articulate those to our users. As end users, not only is it hard to get people to use Office to its full capabilities and become power users, but how as IT do we approach the situation of educating our end users on what corporate policies are? You know, you can't know what you don't know. The long story short of all of this is that employees are going to keep using whatever devices they have in order to do their work most efficiently, whether those are provided by the company or provided personally.
Thanks, Marissa.
I don't know if your thing is on.
Can you hear me?
Oh,
it's right here. Okay. All right.
There it goes.
That's better. Can everyone hear me?
Ah.
Okay. Thanks, Marissa. That's a good segue to this quote that I'm personally really inspired by. This is from a blog post by Satya Nadella from the 27th of March. The blog was entitled, "A Cloud for Everyone on Every Device." And he says, "We live in a world where device types, shapes, sizes, and form factors are exploding and will continue to do so. Devices extend our abilities in ways that are uniquely suited to task, context, and occasion. And that's really a great backdrop for the demo that we have for you today. This blog post coincided with the announcement for Office on iPad, which features in this demo. And even though we made an announcement about a new device and a new platform, really the context is the cloud. The cloud is how a phone, a tablet, a computer, and a TV all get on the same page and enabling movement within them without any extra effort is really what Office is aiming at. So if I had stood here even, like Marissa said, a year ago, we wouldn't be telling this story. We really want Office apps to be useful for everyone on every device. We want you to be able to switch seamlessly between devices, regardless of platform. We want you to be able to create professional output, even in a browser. We want you to be able to customize and personalize your experience and experience the rich, full office, even if you're offline. Today's demo will cover a variety of devices, but before we do that, I just want to jump a little bit into telling you about the new Office for Mac that's coming out next year. Much like the way in which we've optimized Office for all these different devices, we've made a lot of changes for Office for Mac. Some of you might have used, has anyone used Office for Mac 2011? Okay, so we have some hands in the room. You might recall that the way that it was designed was perhaps weighed a little bit more in favor of the Mac user. What we've decided to do on the engineering side, on the UI side, is to provide an unmistakably Office experience regardless of what device you're using. So starting out with modernization, we've redesigned the UI from scratch, and you'll notice that it's going to be unmistakably Office. It'll be optimized for the Mac, but it'll still be unmistakably Office, starting out with the ribbon and other things that we associate with the Office look. We've also optimized for the Retina display. I know when I use my Mac, I love looking at that glorious screen, and we've been very sensitive to the way that your documents render on that sort of screen. We've provided full support for Office 2013 features. So if you happen to be, I know a lot of you have, many of you have more than three devices. If you're switching back and forth, there'll be full support. Everything will render perfectly. The second part of this story is enterprise-ready Outlook. Before 2011, it used to be called Entourage, and as we've progressed, we've found that Apple devices have, particularly Macs, are finding their way into the business environment more and more, and we don't want anyone to be handicapped when it comes to the way that they use Office. So all the things that you are familiar with on a Windows device is coming to the Mac. There's improved reliability and performance. We've also been very sensitive to customer requests. For example, a lot of people have asked for online archive. That's a good example of something that we've been sensitive to and we're going to have in the next version. Some of the new features that we have are propose new time, category sync, push mail support, weather forecast, things that I know I personally take for granted on Windows. So all that is on the roadmap for enterprise-ready Outlook. And in line with the Office 365 story, we have a very services and cloud-connected experience. The new Office identities, when you're logged in, you have your name on the right with a little picture there. The roaming, most recently used documents view. So even if you last opened your document on your Android phone, it's going to show up in that way when you open it on your Mac. And the seamless integration with Office 365, OneDrive, OneDrive for Business, and SharePoint. So it's very much like you would expect to use Office on any other device. And there are also features for easy collaboration. The demo that we have today is split into three parts, which one of which is a collaboration scenario. And you'd be, just imagine the Mac playing as much of a role as any of these devices in that. And OneNote for Mac is something that we released. You can use it for free right now. We released it just a couple of months ago. And it's exactly the same as you have on Windows. There's high fidelity page viewing, there's editing, there's formatting. You can share notes, you can track changes, and of course, there's syncing across devices. So this Office for Mac is really going to be different than what you're used to, and it fits in very well to the overall devices, across devices and across platform story we're trying to tell. So with that piece in place, I want to tell you a little bit about the way we structured our demo. Because we have so many devices, we do use some devices more for certain scenarios and some and other devices for other scenarios. So when you're on the go, we wind up using more mobile devices. When we want to be a power user, Microsoft, particularly at Office, we recommend you use your PC. In today's demo, we'll be using the Surface Pro 2, which is a great device for some of the power user tasks. And collaborating, which is a scenario that we find ourselves in more and more often in the workplace, and also scenarios in which not both people may not be online at the same time, they might be in different locations. So those are also scenarios that we're sensitive to. So we'll get started with the demo, Marissa.
Okay. Let's make sure I'm switching to the right device.
Yeah, number five.
Okay. So you can see up on the screen, I am using an iPhone. You know, let's say we're starting this story at the very beginning of the day. We're starting off with the scenario of when you need to be on the go. Very often, the first piece of technology, not very often, I would say universally, the first piece of technology that anybody interacts with is their phone. I personally use it as an alarm clock. I know many others do as well. And before I even get out of bed in the morning, I am on my phone, triaging my inbox, looking at my calendar, getting ready for the day. I need to have a full, rich experience in order to enter the workday fully prepared and, you know, caught up on everything that I'm going to be doing for the day, regardless of which device I'm using. So I happened to grab my iPhone. It was on my bedside table, turned off the annoying alarm, and I'm going to tap right into Outlook. So my email inbox pops up. This is a very similar experience to any of you who are using Windows phones. I'm able to sort through my inbox just as I would in full Outlook on my desktop. I can see unread emails. I can swipe to see things that are sent directly to me. Maybe I flagged an email yesterday, the day before. Maybe somebody else flagged it for me or marked it as important. So I can filter that way as well. And I also want to jump to my calendar view. So I have the options here to go look at people, go stay in my inbox. I'm going to go look at my calendar to see what I have going on for the day. Many people like agenda view. This way I can see all of the meetings and tasks that I have coming up for the day. They'll show up if they're tasks, they'll show up if they're meetings, they'll show up if they're online or in person. So I'm actually able to plan my day before I ever leave my bed. I'm a very visual person. I like to have a full calendar view, so I'm able to switch into day view here so I can have a solid view of when I have space in the day. I'm not sure when I'm going to be able to eat lunch here. Hopefully they provide food for us at the weekly marketing lunch. I'm ready to, you know, get off and start my day. Let's say I'm on my phone later in the day. I might have had a customer meeting. I'm still coming into the office. And I have a meeting coming up at 11:30. This is a follow-up meeting that I have. It's taking place online. And I'm not sitting at my desk, so I need to join that meeting right now. So I'm going to go ahead and tap into the follow-up meeting that I see there for me at 11:30. I had sent this to a couple of people. Let's follow up on the action items for this meeting. Shoot, I'm not there. Good thing it's an online meeting, which is noted for me here. Without ever leaving OWA, I'm actually able to tap join the online meeting, and it automatically brings me into the Link app that's already on my device. There we go. So it looks like Garth Fort is already in the meeting, and it looks like he is presenting some content. Kaberi is playing Garth Fort for me on this PC that we have here. And it looks like Garth is presenting this this deck. Maybe he is illustrating some points, maybe he's clicking through the slides. But the fact that I'm joining mobily, I don't lose out on any of the experience that I would have if I was joining from my PC or even if I was there in person. I am able to hear him clearly, I'm able to see his notes, I'm able to see his markups, I'm able to see him go through these slides. This is just the presentation we were talking about today. And I'm doing that all on my iPhone. It would be the exact same experience, very similar experience, if I were calling in from an Android phone as well, and of course a Windows phone as well. So I am done with that meeting. I'm gonna stop viewing it, I'm gonna hang up. Not interested. And I'm on my phone, I'm still maybe on my commute to work. I have text messages on my phone, I make phone calls, I'll browse the web, and I have to get some personal work done as well. So I'm going to go into my notebook. This is Kaberi's phone, this is Kaberi's notebook. And I have some personal things coming up that I need to take care of today as well. One of the tabs that I have open on my notebook has to do with a friend Amanda's birthday. Great thing is, I've already shared this notebook with Amanda, so we're coordinating on, you know, planning for her birthday. I tap into get things done. What are the checklist of things that we need to do? On my PC, I already added this picture of a cake. And I'm going to write a note to Amanda. Saying, hey, we need to make a decision on this cake. What do you think of it? I can go to the bakery and pick it up on my way home from work. I don't need to text her. I don't need to email her. I know she's busy with her own job and commitments elsewhere during the day. But because we've already shared this notebook with each other, I know that she has the ability to go in. She'll see that there's an update. She'll see my note. And by the end of the day, we'll be all synced up on our party plans. So those were some, you know, quick tasks that I got done on my phone. I actually joined a full meeting. But I'm, you know, I might get on the train and I need to do some full real work. I might not want to do that on my iPhone, so I'm going to pull out my iPad, and Kabiri's going to show you some of the rich capabilities of Office for iPad that I hope some of you have gotten the chance to see, possibly during the keynote earlier this week, and we're going to dive a little bit deeper.
So, well, a year ago, when I had my iPad, I just didn't think of this device as a productive device. I thought of it as a consumption tool. It's a great device. But ever since I started using the apps, even before they were released, I was shocked at how the device itself changed for me in the way that I used it, the way I relied on it, and the things that I could do on it. So I'm going to walk you through some of those things right here. So I've clubbed my apps together here. I've called them my productivity apps. I'm going to start out with OneDrive for Business. And as you can see here, this looks very much like it does on Windows on the desktop. These are all my documents. I have different folders. I can click on them, and it's all there alphabetically. I can even go to my recent files just as I would on any other device, and the things that I've recently opened appear here. And also, sometimes when you're on the go, you might not have access to Wi-Fi, you might not have cellular data on your iPad. Some people choose not to. You can actually store them offline. I haven't done so here, but you have the capability of doing that. So going back to files, now if I were to, let's say, start off with a Word document, so let's pick something. Let's look at the Northwind proposal here. It opens in the native iPad viewer. And as you can see, painfully, there is text behind the cover, behind these green and yellow boxes, which is slightly disturbing. As I move down, some of the letters have been squished to the left. And, you know, this is really not an ideal viewing experience. So I'm going to do something. I'm going to open this up in Word for the iPad. And as you can see, this renders in full fidelity. It's nice and neat. I can open it. I can make it bigger. I can make it smaller. The table of contents looks exactly as it should. I can see all the different comments here. A lot of people have been collaborating on this document. And I have the review tab open here. So much like I called out in the roadmap for Office for Mac, Office for the iPad as well is unmistakably Office while still being optimized for the environment in which you'd be using the iPad and a lot of the touch capabilities that one has come to know and love about the iPad. I want to call out here track changes. You see this little green thing here, which I can switch on and off. That's an iPad feature. We've been sensitive to bring those kind of familiar elements to the way that you use iPad, Office on the iPad, because we know that when you switch between devices, you kind of enter a different mode as you use different platforms. So with track changes on, I can see there's a panel here, and Michael and David have already been collaborating on this document. What I particularly like is that the comments are threaded. So say I haven't looked at this document in a while, I don't have to think too much about who has said what to who. They're just not singular comments in a vacuum. So if I were to scroll down and go to save this section right here, I'm looking at this image, and I think it's a little bit large. So what I do is I click on it, and you'll see right away, again, optimized for the iPad. Cut, copy, paste, delete. These are all iPad-related elements. The grip handles are larger because when you're using a touch device, you don't want to fat finger things. I do that all the time, and I can just make this bigger and smaller. Move this up. And you can see that the text dynamically reflows. So I get a sense for where I want to place it. And I think I want to leave it right there. Another thing I want to call out is you might be collaborating. So we do have a section later in the demo where there's real-time collaboration. But if I want to know who's using this document at this point in time, all I need to do is click on the top there. I can see two authors are editing. And I see that it's my colleague, Sarah Davis. She and I are working on this document together, and it's just good to know that I can do that, and I can know if there's someone else in the document. You can see there's email as a link and email as an attachment. I'm currently not logged into OAuth iPad, otherwise it would be in black, and I could just send the document to someone. So with that, I will get out of Word and show you some of the cool features in Excel. So traditionally, the iPad is not known to be the sort of device on which you might be working on spreadsheets, but Excel for iPad really changes that. I have here a 2014 expenses spreadsheet, and I've created some really attractive charts which you wouldn't find on any other app. I have a few other tabs. There's lots of data in here. There's a lot of data particularly in here, similar to a document that I'm actually going to work on when I use the Surface. So let's go back here to the overview. And I see here we have a bar graph of some sort here with expenses by year. And you know, I don't think I'm really happy with the way that it looks. I could apply different charts and see what looks good, or I could just click here on recommended. And what Excel does is it actually pulls the raw data and suggests different charts to me based on the nature of the data. It might be based on the magnitude of the numbers. It might be based on whether there are decimal points, whether it's currency, whether it's percentages. Those are the sorts of things, and then I can just replace it with one. So maybe to me this looks better, and I can just click on it. I'm going to move on to PowerPoint, which is another scenario that we've thought about very carefully while optimizing for the iPad. A lot of people like to walk in to a boardroom, a conference room, and just project and be done with it. You don't want to have to take in a laptop. You don't want to take your presentation on a thumb drive and have to put it into another device. And PowerPoint for the iPad addresses exactly that. So I have here a really attractive presentation, which I'm going to put into presenter view. And you can see there's a lot of rich animations. I've used a variety of them just to showcase the variety that we have in here. But perhaps you wouldn't use that particular one in a business environment. But it's there, if you wish. Oftentimes, I found this in presentations, I think Marissa does, and at Microsoft we'll be, you know, in a one-hour meeting and we'll be fixated on this one slide for like 30 minutes. And, you know, you might use a whiteboard, but why do you need to use a whiteboard when you can actually use inking capabilities? Inking capabilities to actually make, there we go. Okay, orange. So if I were to mark something like this, we're focusing on these data points. If I want to highlight something, I actually easily highlight it. And this allows the conversation to remain on the slide. You don't have to have people looking at say, the whiteboard or someone taking notes and then sending them later. This really allows for that rich interaction that revolves around particular slides. So with that, these are some of the scenarios that we've been thinking of very deeply with engineering scenarios on the go. We'll transition now to the power user phase. So for the power user section of the demo, we'll be using a Surface Pro 2. It's just the type of device that you need to do some of these high-value, more intensive sort of productive tasks. Just taking a little bit of time to power up. There we go. So, you know, sort of picking up where I left off, I'll make a presentation, and then people in the room will say, hey, could you send that to me? In the past, you might have actually decided that, to email it. You email it to one person, and then, you know, you walk down the corridor 2 days later, and they say, hey, you know, I didn't actually receive that presentation. And that's the reason why we have Yammer, that among other reasons, where you can figure out what other people are thinking and doing. And in Yammer, what I can do is I can just post it, and the deck is available for a large group, and I can actually control who sees it. We're just a little bit behind here.
Now we have the right screen up. Sorry about that.
Right, so this is my Yammer page, and as you can see here, I'm part of different groups. This is my news feed, so whatever's current. So Sarah Davis is asking if my presentation is available to share with my manager. I don't think it is at this point. But there is something else that I think would be is something that I'd like to share with the sales team. Perhaps not the entire company, especially when you work for a company like Microsoft. We are now 130,000 full-time employees with the Nokia acquisition. So best to just save it for specific audiences. So I'm going to click on sales and add something here. So I'm going to go to upload file from your computer. I actually saved something on my desktop. This is a deck from a previous presentation. Here is the deck from yesterday's meeting. And I do that, and I can actually call out specific people. Whoops. In this case, I'm actually going to bring this to Sarah Davis's attention. And there we go. I post it. And I don't have to actually bother with all the emails and all the communications with multiple people. Under each post, you could like the post. And it's a simple thing in social media that lets me know that this is something that's appreciated rather than actually having to have a conversation or get an email. People can leave replies. People can even share. So there are lots of capabilities within Yammer. Other power user scenarios revolve around Outlook. That's something that Marissa addressed in her market trend slide. A lot of stuff around data loss prevention that she's going to show you.
Yep. So a lot of those scenarios that I was talking about, as far as unintentional sharing of information, not knowing certain company policies, usually take place within your Outlook inbox. While scenarios like Yammer and sharing presentations, and if you've all seen a lot of the new stuff that's coming with the Office Graph, you could imagine how those contextual sharing of presentations, hey, I was in this meeting, this was shared with me on Yammer, and you know it's showing up to me here, that can be a really, really powerful scenario. But no matter how good that collaboration scenario gets, no matter how great we are at sharing, all of us still have to spend a significant amount of time sitting in Outlook and being a power user there. So I'm logged in as Kabiri here. within Outlook on my desktop. I'm using a Surface 2 Pro. Sometimes I use this as a tablet. Sometimes I use it as a PC. We were, you know, joking around the office about, you know, we've starting to use touch screens so often now that I find myself touching monitors all over the place without realizing that they're not touch screens. But luckily here on my Surface, it's able to recognize when I'm using touch, when I'm using a mouse. Maybe I want to switch into touch mode, which is something that a lot of our users in 2013 aren't even aware of quite yet. It switches these common command prompts into a more touch-friendly thing that makes sense when I'm holding this tablet, when I'm on the go, not sitting at my desk, for example. It puts these office commands and quick commands on the right-hand side of the tablet. So this, you know, Yammer notification, I might not want to see it. I'm going to quickly delete it there with my thumb. Because I'm here with a full mouse and keyboard, I'm going to switch back into mouse and keyboard mode. Don't have to worry about my, they're quite dainty fingers. They're not big fingers. So I don't have that problem very often. But I'm going to go click into this project update. I see that it was marked important by somebody who is important to me. And reading into the context of the email, I noticed these Office apps that show up here without me prompting them. These are part of the Office apps development model that we have enabled within Office. So any web developer can become an Office developer by creating these apps using HTML5 and JavaScript or JavaScript. And the great thing about these applications, we were using OWL on the iPhone. We might go in and look at Outlook web apps when you're accessing Outlook online. Maybe you don't have your PC with you. You write these Office apps once. Some of them come native with, out of the box when you buy Outlook. You write them once, and they are enabled across client applications as well as online applications, whether it be Outlook, Word, Excel, whatever it is. So that's really great to know as a developer. Let's go see what these are. The first one is a Bing Maps Office app. Looks like I'm having trouble connecting to the internet. Stop using my internet, guys. And another one of them is suggested meetings, which actually doesn't need online access for. It notices contextually within the content of the email. It's not reading your email like, you hear on other email services. It's noticing certain attributes within the content of the email, and Office is natively suggesting those to you. You can see right now I'm having trouble connecting to the internet, and it's still recognizing those for me, which is great because I don't always have a solid connection, especially when I'm traveling. It's smart enough to actually already see that this meeting time has passed because this was a past email, but it gives me the ability to schedule a meeting at a time that makes more sense, and it does that all through natively through Outlook, so I don't actually have to fill in any of that data myself. I can go ahead and put something on the calendar for Robin and I. The next email that I see has to do with sending somebody customer info. This is one of those scenarios that I mentioned before about unintentionally sharing information that you might not know is violating a certain policy. Of course, my colleague Garrett is asking me to send customer information. I'm going to pop down the ribbon here, attach the Northwind customer data. Before I've even finished typing, my salutation, a policy tip has popped down. Within that experience, within my inline reply experience, this would happen anywhere that I was doing where I was composing this email. It could be online, it could be in a browser, it could be on my Mac. Whatever it is, this experience is the same. I go, hey, what's going on? Policy tip popped down. I highly doubt that the hi Garrett that I wrote is sensitive information, so I'm like, what's going on here? I can simply hover over the policy tip, and I see that there seems to be credit card information that's contained within the attachment that I actually attached to the email. If I went forward and tried to send this, I would be blocked from sending it. And this gives me a very solid reason as an end user to understand contextually, hey, this is why I can't send this email. I'm actually able to click in and learn more about my organization's policy rules. And this is a great way to let your end users know about new policies, things that they might know, not, you know, be aware of. Maybe that didn't retain to them in the mandatory HR training that we had to take last month. Maybe I didn't remember that this data was located within that spreadsheet. In this way, you know, you can connect up to SharePoint and teach them more about that. From an IT management perspective, of course, there's situations by which you're, you know, maybe going to want to override some of these policies. Maybe I've gotten permission from a manager. Maybe there's some other explicit reason why I know that this this spreadsheet is okay to send to Garrett. I have the ability to override that that control that was placed on me before sending the email, but it actually gives me clear guidance that, hey, okay, you've overridden this policy tip. However, your decision might be reviewed later by your organization. Maybe HR is going to get a report on this, you know, whatever it might be. And this, of course, can be set up, you know, specifically by each organization depending on your policy controls. Maybe you can't override it or whatever it might be. I'm a great employee, so I'm not going to send that. Clicking through my email, I notice another important email during my day. This is the Northwind proposal, and it was sent to me specifically, not the rest of my team. I happen to work on the Northwind sales team, and I see that this this information is actually going to be relevant to the rest of my team as well. So luckily, I have synced over here on the left-hand side of my Outlook my Northwind Trader site mailbox. This is a shared SharePoint site that all of my Northwind team members are a part of, but it's showing up in my inbox as well, so I don't ever have to leave the context of my Outlook in order to get insight there. One of the things that is so great in that contextual email box inbox is that all of the documents that are related to that particular account or whatever it might be show up in there as well. So I'm still never leaving Outlook, and I'm, you know, doing really great stuff in there. This document, for example, is, you know, going to be very relevant to everybody. I want to make sure that it goes into that documents folder as well. So I'm going to click on the attachment, drag it, and drop it right into the documents, and make sure that, you know, everybody else there is able to see that as well. I could do the same thing with the entire email or any other email that I find as relevant. For example, this one about the Northwind budget. I can move that to the Northwind Traders inbox. A notification pops up that there's a new email in there, and all of my colleagues who are a part of the SharePoint site or follow it, for example, via SharePoint will notice that as well. So that's another really great scenario in terms of protecting information, sharing information with the right people, and making sure that things don't go anywhere that you don't want it to. I'm doing full, rich, you know, big decision making while I'm in Outlook. Another place in office by which we do a lot of that large amounts of information gathering and analysis is within Excel. So I'm going to let Kabiri show you a little bit about some of the power user scenarios within Excel.
So to get started with Excel, early in my career, I used to work in market research and work with vast amounts of data, and this was before Office 2013. And there were many repetitive tasks that I had to do, which I didn't enjoy. And so when I look at Excel now, I just wonder why didn't I have this back then? And I'll show you some of those repetitive tasks absolutely solved by a feature called Flashfill. So out here, I have an expenses sheet. And I can see here from the data, and this might have been pulled from a different software that my company uses. And here I can see that there's a lot of information, relevant information, separated by hyphens. So it seems like John is the representative who spent $1,300 on events. And frankly, I can't present this in a meaningful way. I need to actually pull out John's name and know that he spent this certain amount of money on events. So what I'm going to start doing is typing John, and then I see the next line is Jenny. And you can see that Excel has recognized what I'm trying to pull from that from that column there and finishes it for me. And all I need to do is hit enter. And this is a shorter table, but you can imagine. You can apply this to a really large number of rows. And the same with categories. I start typing out events, and then I go down here, I start typing out advertising, and it completes itself in under 30 seconds. So what I'm going to do here is, now that I've been able to parse this data very effortlessly, I might want to do something more with it. I want to visualize it. I want to represent it in a way that I can actually share it with other people, and at a glance, they can know what I'm talking about. So let me select this here. And you can see there's a little icon that's appeared here. And that's what we call quick analysis. It's a tool that allows you to quickly and easily analyze data with some of Excel's most frequently used chart tools and color coding and other things. So let's click on that, and there are a variety of things. So there's formatting. I'm happy with the way that this looks. Click on charts, and I can mouse over clustered columns. This is what it would look like. And clustered bar, more charts. I can click and see more. I might want to go to, say, tables. So in this case, I want to use a pivot table, which, again, back in my market research days, was a powerful tool, but there was a lot of learning involved. And I'll show you here, shown in the preview, how I just don't have to do that much work. So I'm going to go ahead, and I see this is kind of what I'm looking for, but not quite, but it's going to help me get there. So I'm going to click on pivot table. A new sheet opens up, and exactly the information that I need is right here. But I can actually use different facets of the data to pivot it. So if I want more granularity, I click on data. But I actually don't need that much information. What I'm concerned with is how much we spent on advertising, how much we spent on digital marketing. So I'm going to get rid of that. And I had actually been working on this spreadsheet before. I'm going to copy this. I know that this is our spend for January, and I've been building something out here. So expenses, different categories, advertising, digital marketing, all the different months, and charts to go with it. I'd previously done this already. Let me just delete that and paste this again. Oops, need to go back. So let's go back here, expenses trends. There we go. And as you can see, the chart completes itself. Now, this is something that I could share with people, with my manager who's going to look at this and know that, you know, especially in January, we've been spending a lot of money on promotions, and perhaps we could talk a little bit more about that. So this is a good segue into our collaboration segment. Now, I'm going to get into OneDrive for Business in the browser. There we go, OneDrive for Business. And as you can see, these are all my documents. These are all my documents. If I wanted to go back, those were actually in my PF demo folder. These are all my documents here, alphabetically listed. If I wanted to see them, see what I opened most recently, it's right here. And this little sign here is the fact that it's been pinned somewhere on some device, so it's in some way important to me. I can actually look at documents that I follow, other people in my organization, and documents that have been shared with me, so I don't have to remember what is that document called. I just know that it's been shared with me. Sarah Davis shared something, and I can click here. At this point, no one has shared anything with me, but I'm going to go back and share the Excel sheet that I was just working on with a colleague. Here we go, Northwind Marketing Sales Spend. So you can see these little dots here. Open it up, and what's great, particularly when you have multiple versions of things, you can. There's a little preview here. It's even more powerful when it comes to PowerPoint, and you can actually scroll ahead and see what else there is in here to be entirely sure that you're sending the right document. At the bottom, you can open this up and edit it. You can post a YAML, which is something I showed you already. I'm going to click on Share, and a little dialog box will open up. In this dialog box, you can see that. So I'm going to share it with Sarah Davis. I can enter a little note. Here is the data. I can either give her the ability just to read it, but actually in this case, I want her to jump in and edit it as well. So I can leave that at can edit. This is something I can go back and change later, and I'll show you how. I can add an extra layer of protection by requiring her to sign in. Otherwise, she could possibly share this link with somebody else, and they could just get in as well. So I'm going to click share, and that just sends out an email to Sarah. She clicks on it, and she can just start editing. I also get an email in my inbox that reminds me that I've sent it. So that's a good example of the way in which you can actually control the way documents have been shared. If I go back here, there are other things that I can do. I can look at the version history. I can download a copy. I can view it in a browser. I'm going to open a Word document, which is something that I was actually working on earlier in the day on my iPad, which is the business plan. This is the email, as you can see on the top. Kaveri Chaudhary has shared, and I just have something in my inbox that reminds me that I've actually shared this document. So I'm going to go ahead and open this up. It opens in the browser, and this is a read-only view. If I want to edit it, I have two options. I can go to Edit Document. I can either edit it in Word on my desktop using the full functionality of Word. But if I want to really collaborate in real time with my colleague, Sarah, I can just edit in Word online and make some quick changes. So again, renders in full fidelity. Sarah is already in there. So I'm going to scroll down and see where she is. I see her. Oops. There she is. In the executive summary, we're talking a little bit about core values and shared vision. And she says, we really want to make more sales. This is very important. Now, I actually want to have a conversation with her. All I need to do is to put my mouse there and insert a comment. So we want to make more sales. Perhaps some numbers would help. So I'm going to write that down. Perhaps some numbers would help substantiate our goals. And so I post this comment, and she can see it right away. And she's also using a PC in this case. And much like the iPad or any other Office app, you can see the comments are threaded. So I know. And she's responded right away, and I see this in real time. Sounds good. I'll pull the numbers. I'm going to jump down and look at another section, customer research. And I feel like this section's a little bit weak. It talks about a customer survey co-sponsored by a partner, and it asked why they chose Northwind over Northwind over other name brands. And I think it's important to provide a little bit more context here. So I'm going to go ahead and insert a table, just as you would on the desktop, and make it a small table. And if I want to change the formatting, I can. These are the different options available to me. Just change how it looks. I think I like the look of that. So I'm going to write down here brand and region, say, and market share, for example. And because Sarah's in here already, and she actually has the data on hand, she can just literally plug that in. So she's talking about Nokia, and we can together collaborate, even though we're not on the same in the same location, and we can do this in real time. So with that, I'll pass it over to Marissa, who's going to show us some cool things on PowerPoint.
Great. Thank you very much. So this was a really compelling scenario in the fact that look at all of the things that Kaveri was doing within the browser. I was co-authoring with her as Sarah Davis, and I was in my browser as well. I was actually in Google Chrome. She could be in Internet Explorer. Our full support across browsers of the Office Online applications is extremely important when it comes to this entire story that we're telling. Not only is this important when you talk about the Office 365 scenario of using many devices, maybe not wanting to stream Office down onto all of those devices, maybe I already used up my 5-user licenses, or you know, I just don't want to do that for some particular reason on my personal device. Maybe I'm using a shared computer. That experience that you have in the browser is something that really shows the commitment to Microsoft support across platforms as well. Yes, we can talk about different operating systems, different devices, but in this world that we live in, where internet connectivity is becoming more and more easy to come by, being able to do those full edits and collaborations in the browser is really compelling. So let's see. I'm gonna maybe exit this this document, and I'm going to go into the Northwind presentation that I was working on recently. Or maybe not. Is it the Northwind presentation?
It is the Northwind presentation.
Oh.
And it's the one
there
that's
we go.
There we go, yeah.
Oh, that's the same one. Okay, I just want to make sure I go into this right one. Like Kaveri showed you, I could edit this in PowerPoint Online, or I could edit it in full PowerPoint, and you know, still have that full collaboration scenario. So I'm going to go ahead and open that in full PowerPoint. And even though I'm not online, I can still have that full collaboration scenario going on with a coworker, even though I've opened it on my desktop. So you just saw the dialogue pop up that Sarah Davis was also editing the document. If I want to make sure and double check, you know, who's there at any certain time, I could do that as well. I could also promote the conversation that we're having here to a link conversation. I'm having a little bit of internet connectivity problems with the demo Wi-Fi, but I could promote those conversations in the context of the PowerPoint that we're actually editing together. She's on her browser, I'm on my PC. It doesn't matter what kind of story you're telling, the experience that you're having across devices is totally consistent. So I'm going to go ahead and make some changes within the PowerPoint itself. I think I mentioned this before, PowerPoint is one of my favorite tools. No matter, you know, if you're presenting on an iPad, making a compelling scenario, you're oftentimes presenting to people with very different ways of learning and understanding, and this is a great way to punctuate some of those points that you're trying to make. A lot of really great new tools in Office 2013 within PowerPoint. I'll show you some of my favorites. One of those being the eyedropper tool, which I was very excited that came about within this version of PowerPoint. I want to make, you know, this beautiful kite commitment to the future slide look even more compelling, and I want to do that by making sure that my make this a little bigger. My colors match up even better. And I can do that by matching it to the color of the kite, for example. Another really great feature within PowerPoint that make it not only a presentation tool, but a creation tool as well, is the ability to merge and manipulate shapes. For example, there's only so many shapes and icons and things that you can find online that are created already. But let's say I want to create this television icon. It's making sense for the manufacturing presentation that I'm giving. I've created this kind of icon here. It's kind of bare bones. It looks like I created it in PowerPoint. I'm going to go ahead and do some merging of those shapes. Anybody here with design experience or design eye will recognize some of these features from other really more full rich photo editing softwares that are now available within the context of PowerPoint. So I've merged those two shapes as a subtraction of the entire image. I'm going to go ahead and highlight all of them and merge them all together now into a union, and I'm able to change the style of that as well. So let's say I want to do this intense orange effect to make it match the others. You can see because I subtracted the presence of two of those shapes while still including them in the image, it subtracted that from the color that filled in. So, you know, I demo that feature because I think it's really cool. I use it all the time. I like creating things that are new and, you know, nobody's ever seen before and, you know, might be very contextual to my presentation. But you could imagine some other things that you could do with that. Those of you who have used this version of PowerPoint will notice the way that I'm able to dynamically align things with other images, resize with ease, and, you know, able to, you know, coordinate my sizes, whatever I'm doing on that slide, which is really great. I can also save that image to be used in my future versions of PowerPoints. I'm not gonna stop working with manufacturing and television, so that's very great. One of the things that Kaveri was showing you on the iPad was presenter's view on the iPad, and the ability to fully present on iPad with Office for iPad, and have a similar experience that you would be having here. I'm going to go ahead and start presenting this presentation. And I'm going to switch the display settings on this, which makes me not be able to see it very well. But you're actually able to see the presenter's view that I would be seeing on my desktop right now. For example, the deck that we were presenting earlier has presenters view here on this monitor and this monitor below, but you're only seeing the full-fledged version of what we want to be presenting and what we want to see. However, especially when talking about rich content, you know, it's important to have notes. It's important to know what's coming up next as a presenter to really give you that extra leg up in making your point. Anyways, you're able to resize, you know, how large your notes show up. You're able to resize how small the presentation looks. Maybe you're very familiar with the images, but you want your notes up there, so you're able to read them very easily, maybe on a smaller device. And you're all able to do that through Presenter's View. This also gives me the ability to ink. This gives me the ability to have a laser pointer. I cannot see what I'm selecting over there. Here's a laser pointer, for example, that shows up on the presented content without me ever having to leave PowerPoint presenter's view and without ever losing the context of my presentation. So we spent quite a while going through some of the power user abilities that we have within Office 365, and as well as the things that are coming new with Office for Mac next year. We want to maybe spend the next 10, 15 minutes opening it up to questions, and whether that has to do with particular end user abilities, you know, our commitment to developing these features across platforms, how we think about those feature enhancements, and, you know, what we include in different platform developments in certain browsers, on certain platforms. We'd like to open it up to those kind of questions now. Yeah, back there.
Yeah. Can you speak to the features that you're going to add to Excel? So now, as you talk about a lot of other features on the Mac platform, but Excel is still a long way behind the PC itself.
Yeah, there are several features. Anything in particular that you're looking to see? Right. Sorry?
Mainly around some of the more powerful tools, the Power Pivot, Power View, things like that.
Yeah, I can tell you that in the current roadmap, we don't have Power View and Power Pivot for Mac, but those are some of the things that we're thinking of bringing.
And that's also, you know, a compelling scenario when we talk about Office 365 and able to actually interact and view those Pivot, Power View, things online.
Yeah.
So that's always going to exist.
Yes.
Specific to the outline
It would show up, do you mean like in the browser, for example? Right, no, it wouldn't show up there. Yeah?
Speaking about iOS in particular, while that you mentioned the Office apps like Word, Excel, and PowerPoint on iOS that were just released, very rich experience, right? But one could argue that the Outlook web access app on the same devices from iOS devices do limit you in a way as far as functionality.
Sorry, I didn't catch what you said. Did you say that there is or there isn't full functionality?
One could argue today that there isn't full functionality and capability for OWA for iOS. Right?
Yeah.
Any plans to basically do like a similar, like a mail app?
Yeah. Currently, we don't. We are putting in a lot of effort into O of iPad. So just like with any of the other apps, you can expect, particularly through Office 365, for us to be delivering new updates. You know, we launched Office for the iPad on the 27th of March, and on the 29th of April, we had a you know, including bug fixes and demanded features. We already had an update. So, if there are any features that you think are currently missing from OAuth iPad, those are probably in the roadmap, which will be delivered, and I think you'll have a more full-featured experience coming soon.
And not to keep harping on the browser experience, but the OWA engineering team has fully committed to bringing a lot of those missing features, which, you know, there aren't very many at this point, but we do hear the same story from customers saying, hey, there's certain features in Outlook that we don't see in OWA on the browser, and they're fully committed to bringing all of those within, the next couple of years to OWA in the browser. So that's always going to be a scenario for iPad as the OWA for iPad app catches up. And that's kind of my...
That's what would probably drive the adoption from using the native mail app from iOS,
right? Yeah. The native OWA app on iPad versus the browser. Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that there is a timeline for next version of the app.
Yes.
Is that 2014 or 2015?
2015. Yeah, the first half of 2015.
Do you know, will there be any updates to 2011
version
prior
to that?
No.
Will OneDrive for Business on the Mac come out before the Office Suite on the Mac? Or is it going to be delivered at the same time?
They'll be delivered at the same time because there needs to be that they need to talk to each other.
What was the time frame?
The first half of 2015.
First half of 2015.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
And how through a browser
Sorry.
I'm not sure I understood the question. Setting up, reaching Outlook from your browser?
Yeah, I mean, I can do that now.
Yep.
Go to Safari, go to the mail, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I can log in that way. So I was assuming I could do the same thing through OWA app. Of course, I tried it, it did not let me.
I guess I'm not positive on what you're talking about. Come up after the session and show me, and I'm sure we can figure it out, because you don't have to set up anything differently. You're simply opening up the app and signing in. I'm not sure what you're experiencing. Yeah, it's currently not the same on Mac, but it will be in the new version. The real-time co-authoring is available in the browser, but every other type of co-authoring and
editing that we showed is available on all the clients.
So the real time is only available on the browser?
Yes.
Not available on the whole file.
Yeah, so we have autosave on all the different apps. So periodically, every few minutes, it'll just pick up anything. So even if I'm on my editing on my desktop client, and Marissa is on a browser and she's or anything else, as soon as it updates, it'll show me a couple of minutes later there's a comment. So it's not real time. It's not that you can see her typing as she does, but it'll, you know, it's almost it's getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same? Do you mean online archive?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I can't speak to that. That's a very Windows question. Yeah.
Do you have a scenario in which there are people using both? Is that what you're facing currently? Yes. Yeah.
I would say ideally, I don't have anything to share in terms of roadmap or, you know, what we're working on right now, especially because a lot of those decisions fall under the Windows organization with 8.1 and the native mail app. But ideally, the scenario that you just described is what we're moving towards, right? That every couple of months, every time we update, the touch capability tries to become richer and more a full part of the Windows experience, like you described. So, yes, and not yes that it's coming, but yeah, that's a very ideal situation.
Those apps are typically
unhinged. Yep.
They're not even using.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. The reason you're probably seeing that is from the Office team. We live and breathe in those Office applications, usually on the desktop or in the browser.
Yeah.
But it's not a scenario that we're not thinking of.
Well, what we've said publicly is that we are committed. You know, the iPad is a great example of us wanting to deliver touch-optimized experiences across on all popular platforms. So it's definitely something that we're thinking of. Any more questions? Yeah. We know that people are seeking that scenario, but it's probably not as demanded or as necessary on an iPad type of device. So I would say in our backlog of features, it's not as high up. Everything is on the list. Anything that's not available is on the list. We have a very long list.
Great, well, thank you very much. We'll stay up here for a couple of minutes if you have any specific questions or things that you've tried that you're looking for a second pair of eyes on.
Hi.
Yeah. Thank you.